נועם שרעבי and אלון פוטרמן with כפר עזה טוב.
On this morning's show, we will be talking to three young adults from the kibbutz, Lishpak.
Hi.
Gomi Chamias.
Hi.
And Ariel Vaknin.
Hi.
As well as others, they too have embarked on an unbelievable journey since being evacuated from Kfar Aza under fire. Today, they are here to share experiences and thoughts about the future. Lee, Gomi, and Ariel, welcome. All three of our guests belong to a different kibbutz, peer group within the kibbutz. In Kfar Aza, as in many kibbutzim, children are raised together in age-based groups. Growing up together, kibbutzah members are often as close as siblings, forming friendships that endure even when one leaves the kibbutz. Each year, a new kibbutzah joins the Dor Tzair, the young adult community in the kibbutz. So, Gome, this year it's you. Welcome to the Dor Tzair.
Thank you.
And Gome, that means that you're how old?
I'm 18.
You're 18. So you're the youngest member, or your age group, or the youngest of the Dor Tzair, of the young adults of Kfar Aza, correct?
Yes.
All right. Nariel, how old are you?
I'm 20 years old.
20. And what's the name of your peer group in Kfar Aza?
Chartzit.
Chartzit. And Yuli?
I'm 23 and our group called Lotem.
So 23. You're the veteran. You're the oldest in the room.
In the room, yeah.
All right. Let me ask you guys a question. Where do you and your family live today? We know that Kfar Aza has been evacuated from Kfar Aza after October 7th. And that some of the families are together in some places and others are basically doing their own thing. Where are you three and your families as of today?
Me and my family, since the 8th of October, we're in Shfaim. Me, my mother, my stepfather, and my two younger brothers, who are in the Mishmish group with Gome. We live in... My brothers live in a hotel, and I live in the temporary housing that the government built for us until we can go to Ruhama.
Okay, thank you.
I live in the hotel.
Also in Shfaim.
Also in Shfaim. My family is like separated, so me, my mom, and my brother are in the hotel, and my dad and my sister are somewhere in Tel Aviv.
Okay. And when you say that you're inside the hotel together with a sibling and one of the parents, are you in a single room? Do you have a few rooms? Do you each have a room? What does
we
that look
like?
We
each have a room.
You each have a room.
Yes.
Okay. And Lee, how about you?
Well, my family still live in Shfaim, in the hotel. And I, from December, came back to Kfar Aza to be part of the civilian guard.
So you're part of the civilian guard, part of the first response team, the new
first response team.
And we know that a lot of the members, unfortunately, on October 7th were killed there. So are there other people like you who have joined the first response team?
Well, 7 out of the 14 members in the 7th of October died in the act of heroism. And today, the only one that was in the civilian guard and is today is one person called Georgi. All the others are new members.
Are they your age, younger, older?
there is a big spectrum of the age. Most
only
of us.
Men?
What?
Only men?
Only men, yeah.
Only men.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does your day look like? I mean, if you have family in Shfaim, but you have now joined the first response team in Kfar Aza, and you're traveling, you're commuting between Kfar Aza and Shfaim, which is... north of Tel Aviv, south of Netanya. What does your day-to-day look like?
Well, for the most of the week, I'm in Kfar Aza. I'm over there during the nights, during the days. But in the weekends, I'm going to Shfaim. Once in 3 or 4 weeks, I'm staying in Kfar Aza for the weekends. Most of the time, I'm still in Kfar Aza.
What's it like sleeping there today? We know that no one is basically living in Kfar Aza right now, besides the first response team and some other people who have official roles. But what does it feel like to stay over?
At first,
you stay in your own home, in your family's home.
So
you're there?
At first, we all slept together in one of the kindergartens in the kibbutz.
With sleeping bags?
What?
With sleeping bags? What did you sleep in?
We have a mattress over there,
okay.
And we sleep in on normal beds. In the last couple of months, I came back to my original house, my parents' house. I'm living there with my father, who is also in the civilian guard. We're there together. In the beginning, it was weird. It was weird to see the new background of the kibbutz, the quiet that there is in the kibbutz, when we used to see all the people all the time, and always there is something, and now there is nothing. You're getting used to it. There is no other answer than this.
Thank you. Gome, how about you? What does your day-to-day look like?
I'm now, like, just finished school before the army, so I work most of the time.
So let's zoom in on that for a second. Mm-hmm. You finished 12th grade? And you finished high school in a different school that you actually began the school year in, right?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Basically, we came to Shfaim, and then like 2 months we didn't learn any, we didn't go to school. We just like kind of tried to realize what's going on. Then they put us in one of the schools. We didn't like it. And then they moved us to the Shfaim school.
Ariel, how about you? What's your day look like?
Before the 7th of October, I was supposed to enlist to the army in November. Then I had a couple of MRI exams that didn't go well, and the doctors found a tumor in my brain. So right now I'm partially working in a coffee shop in Shfaim and study cybersecurity. I do a course.
The cyberproof course for Faraza? Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Yes. Yeah. Also for the young adults. Well, there mm-hmm. are several of us doing that. And between treatments. And I plan when I finish the treatments and when we move to Ruhama to start study for going to university. That's why.
So we're going to seize the opportunity to wish you a full and speedy recovery. Refuah shlema, as we say. And a lot of strength, because there's a lot on your plate right now, both personally and, I guess, on a community level, on a national level. It's a lot, so we're happy to have you here with us today.
Thank you.
Within good company.
So tell us, where were you and your family on October 7th, and what did your walk to freedom look like? Ariel.
And on October 7th, me, my stepfather, and my mother, we were in our house in the kibbutz. It's relatively close to the fence. We heard a lot of noise. And besides the alarms, machine noise and car noises and very distinct sound. I remember the AK-47s that the terrorists used. And the Allahu Akbar screams and all of that. So that was like a mess of sound really early in the morning, about 7:30. We went straight into the shelter room. And we stayed there for till about 2:30 a.m. The night after. Till the army came to rescue us, and it was very difficult because we didn't have any water, we didn't have any place to go to the restroom in. It was very stressful, very hot, because we didn't want to power the air conditioner because it made noise.
That's crazy. So how did when you were evacuated from the mamad, from the safe room, how did it look like? Where did you go? How did you get out of the kibbutz?
First, the army rounded up all the people from Maya Street into one house. Then they took all the people from our three blocks to, again, another house. We were, I think, between dogs and people, kids, families. We were about 100 people inside one house. And then they took us on approximately 1.5 kilometer walk in the perimeter road in the kibbutz, straight to the gas station that is right in the entrance in the kibbutz, where all the army forces that came to Kfar Aza regrouped outside the kibbutz. Then till about 5 a.m., it took like 3 hours just to evacuate us between all the people and the dogs and the little luggage that we could take. We stayed in the gas station for about 3 hours till 5 a.m. again. And then they took us on trucks to a slightly safer city, Netivot. Then we were till 12 p.m. in the noon, about, and in a gym hall, I guess, to call it. And
in
then
a
they
gymnasium, yeah.
In Netivot?
Yes.
Wow.
And then they took us with buses to Shfaim, straight to Shfaim. Like, so
when do you arrive at Shfaim? If you like can place it on a timeline.
About 2
Sunday.
PM. Yeah, on
wow.
Sunday. So from the 8th of October straight till now I'm there. Yeah.
Amazing. Gomi, what about you?
I was not in Kfar Aza on the 7th of October. I was in Oraner, which is a kibbutz near, with a group from Germany, like a student exchange. They came the day before. We had like a sleepover there. It was very, like, on the spot. We just like decided to go there. My mom and my brother were in the kibbutz. My sister, at about 3 a.m. that night, decided to go and sleep at her boyfriend's house, and my dad was in Netivot, so all of my family was separated. I woke up that morning, after I went to sleep at 5 a.m. I woke up a few hours later from sirens. We all got into the safe room. We had to explain to the Germans what's going on, what to do. We didn't tell them about the terrorists because, you know, they were already freaked out about the sirens.
Yes. Wow.
And we didn't want to add anything, especially because we didn't understand how big the situation is. I was communicating with my mom. I didn't communicate with my dad at all since the morning. I didn't know where he was. I thought he was still in Netivot. The last picture I got from him was him holding a gun in the entrance of Kfar Aza.
I got that picture too from your brother.
And that's when I realized what's going on. And then we basically told the Germans what's going on as soon as we also started hearing about people getting killed. We started crying, obviously. It's people we know. It was all very hectic. So we were trying to be like all at the same place, but also trying to communicate with everyone we know that is around. At about 5 p.m., I think, that day, they evacuated five of us into Dorot, which is more far away kibbutz with no alarms, obviously.
In a safer spot.
A safer spot. And then the rest of them came at around 10 in the night. My mom and my brother were obviously still there. They evacuated with Ariel in the same house, in the same way. At about, I think it was 12 in the night, I got a call that my dad was injured and he's in the hospital. I was with all of my friends, so they all tried to kind of like comfort me. They didn't know how to. We got on a bus and they evacuated us to En Gedi, to a hotel there with all of the group. My mom and my brother got to Netivot, like the rest of the kibbutz, but then they were taken away to Neora, to my sister. Mm-hmm. At around 3 a.m. they got there. They texted me they were safe and everything is good. I was already in En Gedi. And then I was there, I think, 4 days until we went to Shfaim.
Your story is so crazy to me because there's so much going on. On one hand, you're with a group of people that are not Israelis, and you know they need to know what's going on, and you need to somehow communicate the situation to them while worrying about your own family in Kfar Aza, and then your father, who is worried about your mother and Ofek, your older brother, he is going from Netivot with his gun, with his personal gun, right?
No.
No, not a personal gun?
No.
Oh, he took it from the...
He took it, so he was on the way, and then he saw a bunch of people from the Nova Festival evacuating, like injured people. He helped them evacuate. And then he took a paramedic's gun from the ambulance.
So that it gets even crazier. So he arrives in Kfar Aza with a gun, and he even gets injured while trying to save as many people as possible in the kibbutz. And it's just crazy. Like, you're in the middle of it. You know, like, you need to explain it to someone who is not Israeli. How did they take it, by the way? Like, how were they panicked? Did they understand how big it is, or...
At first, we obviously didn't tell them, so we were trying to explain to them that there's a siren, we go into the safe room, 10 minutes, we go out. But the sirens were, like, overlapping each other, so there was no way to get out. Luckily, we had, like, water and, like, a toilet very nearby, so we allowed ourselves to let them, like, leave a little bit, but everyone came back straight to the safe room every time. When it started getting serious and we started to get... text of what's going on, and we understood the situation, we had to explain to them that there was also terrorists. And when they came close to our kibbutz, to Oraner, we had to explain to them that there might be, like, terrorists downstairs and we have to be quiet. They didn't really understand it at first. They were kind of like, I guess they thought they were in, like, some kind of movie, because obviously it's never been a threat to them. But we tried very hard to, like, relax. Wow. Obviously
it's crazy. So Lee, where were you on October 7th, and what was your walk to freedom like?
Well, I was in Jerusalem with my ex-girlfriend. Today she's my ex-girlfriend. She's from a religion family. So we went with our phone. We have no cell phones, no TV, nothing. And around 7, I think, in the morning, we start to walk to the Bet Knesset, and she live right next to a Palestinian village, and I'm hearing from the Misgadim,
the mosque.
I heard them celebrating, and I got released in last August. So for my job in the military, I know what that means. It means there may be a terrorist attack, maybe some missiles, something like that. But I remember the celebrating, and it was different. Something was different about it. So I told her that I need a second to see if everything okay with my family. Opening my phone, and then I see all the messages from the kibbutz. Around 6:30, I think, something like that. There was the message that they're going inside to the safe rooms.
Yes.
In 6:50, it was the message that there is a terrorist inside of the kibbutz. And I tried to connect the dots. I didn't understand what's going on. I called my father, and he just hung up on me like 3 times, and then he sent me a message. Send a message, we can't talk, so nobody hear us. And I'm trying to understand, what does that mean? Well, who's gonna hear you?
Wow.
It took me like something like 15 minutes. I talk with my brother, he's also living in Tel Aviv. And he explained the situation for me. He told me that there is terrorists inside of the kibbutz, and right now all the family is okay. And every 10 minutes, each one sending him a message that's saying he's okay, and he sent it to me. And we did that because me and some other people that from the kibbutz that were outside, we took all the messages that the people send, all the information that they can give us, and we talk with the soldiers that was inside of the kibbutz. We guide them through the phone. From what we know, the kibbutz, like the map that we have in our heads, they tell us where they are and where they need to go. And from the messages that we got from the people in the kibbutz, we know where there is injuries people, where there's another terrorist. So we will like the navigation through the phone. For me to be able to do that, so my brother took the control about the family, about see if they're all okay. Thank God, luckily, all of my family got out of the kibbutz. My brother-in-law was in the civilian guard as well, and he survived. And I think that was something like 5 in the evening, something like that. I was already on my way to the reserve.
You were called into the army.
I was called in the army back, yeah. Together with my platoon. Our base is next to Be'er Sheva. It's called Sde Teiman.
We all know it very well now.
Yeah, now, yeah. before that, it's nobody know what it is, even me. And we start a couple of missions. We did the first thing that we did in the reserve is to make sure that there is no more terrorists that going inside of the country. We make circles around the Be'er Sheva, around the Ofakim, around the Tifrach, all of these places. We even found one car that was taken hostage, that hijacked by 5 terrorists. They were trying to go to Be'er Sheva.
Oh, wow.
And then after that mission, after a couple of missions, we came back to our base to reorganize to another mission in Sderot. And around this time, Irene, Neta Epstein's fiance, called me when she was outside. And she called me and talked with me about what happened inside and about Neta.
For those who are not familiar with the story, Neta Epstein, may his memory be a blessing, was killed on October 7th while jumping on a hand grenade, saving his fiance's life, Irene's life.
So after she got rescued, she called me and she told me. And I have a little breakdown. So I got released from the reserve. I don't remember the times in that area, but it was in the night between Saturday and Sunday.
After going through all that, how do you make the decision to join the first response team, the civilian guard, as you've called it?
Well, I'm still young. I'm still capable. And now there is almost everybody from the kibbutz is not in the kibbutz, and he cannot make sure that his house is safe. Nobody goes there. And even for the people he came back to Kfar Aza, they need to have some security that if something will ever happen again. So this time we know we are prepared.
So Ariel, you got the chance to fly to London around, I think, February.
Yeah.
On a trip. Lee and I were there as well. Shout out to Emily Cohen for making it happen. Thank you so much.
The amazing Emily Cohen. Love you. Of London. Or as I like to call her, Emily C.
Emily C.
Spice Girl. Emily C. We love you, Emily.
So it was basically a week of fun activities of like getting away and just like escaping the reality in Israel and just like having fun as a group from Kfar Aza. So if you don't mind to share with us one meaningful or funny moment that you had during this trip.
The first night that we got there, I just want to say that Emily gave us a truly Londonic experience. She wanted us to have an authentic London experience for a week, and we just had extreme fun. We went to the Parliament, we went to bars, pubs, we went to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
How crazy is it that this person that we're all talking about, that we're all in love with, and none of us knew before, Emily Cohen, and there are many other partners and friends of Kfar Aza who just stepped up the day after October 7th and said, how can we help? What can we do? And they've been dedicated and devoted and generous, and they've been engaging their friends and family just to create these opportunities. I mean, I think about it for a second, and it's just not something to take for granted. You know, we're so amazing. Appreciative of
it's not yeah. It's everything. Something that we always think about it. We always talk about it. Our group of friends, that it's you can't explain it.
I can't explain it,
but why? The why?
It's something that I think exists very strong in the Jewish people in times of struggle, in our country and our outside of our country. A lot of Jewish communities stepped up, even not in money, but just in sheer help and will to be there for us. And that, and Emily Cohen and the Jewish community of London specifically did that for us, and not only for us, for almost 100
young adults,
like four other groups after us, right?
And that's crazy. And I think the greatest evening that we had there is the first evening where she took us to a pub called the Cavendish Pub, I think, where it was just packed with tens and dozens of people from the Jewish community. They just wanted to show us their support, their love, their gratefulness that we are there and we are willing to just take part in this event with them. And we had a lovely evening where we drank, we ate. There was a magician, a great magician.
Amazing magician.
Yeah, which I do not remember his name. And just the friendships, the connections that we made there are great. Just
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. I definitely agree. I felt that night I was so amazed. Like how many people want to talk to you, not necessarily to... for you to give them, you know, your story of October 7th, just to know that they're there, and that you're not alone. And yeah, and they want to, yeah, it was amazing. I was speechless, honestly. Yeah. So during the trip, you got to meet these people, right? What did you find that they were interested about? Like, what did they want to talk to you about? What is, like, burning right now for them?
Aside from October 7th and its consequences, they wanted to share some of their feelings, because some of them were truly very scared to be Jewish in Britain right now, and non-specifically Jewish outside of Israel, because mm-hmm. we have got to remember that anti-Semitism is on the rise for years now, especially in Britain. And it's very difficult for them. It was difficult for them before and after. A lot of the Jewish people in Britain are not afraid specifically to show that they're Jewish, but they are a little bit more worried. It's a way more difficult than we think, because we live in a Jewish country that is run by Jewish law, and most of us are Jewish. But they are a minority there. So even if they are a good minority, to say, helpful people and good people, and they're leading people in their community, it's still very difficult for them. And a lot of the British people that we got to talk to from the Jewish community talked to me and other people like that.
I think it's so special that you were invited to come to London so people could hug you and learn about you and show their support to you. But at the same time, you learn so much about them and what they're going through, even though a big part of what they're going through has to do with things that happened in Israel. Like, it shows you that amazing and deep bond between the people of Israel, regardless of where they are around the world, Jews of the diaspora and Jews of Israel, and how something that happens to us affects all of us, regardless of where we are. That's what I'm hearing from your story.
Yeah. And while we might not understand exactly what they're going through as Jews in the diaspora, it's a language that only we have. Like, we can understand what they're going through, and they can understand what we're going through, even if it's completely different things. So I think it's amazing, and we need to really preserve that. Gome, for you, it's a very interesting time. I mean, October 7 kind of caught you in such a complex time, I think. Well, for all of us, but specifically you managed to move into a hotel, finish high school, and go to prom in the middle of the war, which is amazing.
And there's something you don't think about during a war, prom. Yeah. Prom right? is like, you know, from normal times, right? Not war times. That's
you can tell us about where was your prom later. I'm curious about that. So you managed to also join the Dotsair, the young adults community in Kfar Aza. Go to a trip with your kvutza abroad, right? The traditional trip when you finish high school. And now you are about to start your military service. So if you don't mind sharing with us after you tell us about your prom, how did October 7 affect you as a kvutza? Like, you have a very strong kvutza, right? How many are you?
We're 16.
16. You had just finished high school. The whole kibbutz knows you now because you had a very big performance in Shfaim. Mm-hmm. And so how did it affect you as a kvutza? How do you go through something like that together? And just go for it.
I will start with the prom since it's such a burning question. My kvutza, my group, went to two proms. So one from the school in Shfaim and one from my old school. One was, I didn't go to it, obviously, because the Shfaim one, I was in Bagrut, so I couldn't go there, but they had a lot of fun. The second one was in Petach Tikva. I don't know why.
It was like your old school from Shar HaNegev, yes, but in Petach Tikva.
But in Petach Tikva. And it was kind of the first time we saw each other as like a full, everyone was there since the last time we were in school, which is, I think, before the 7th of October, a lot before. So it was very emotional. But it was also very, like, fun to see the people happy.
Felt like a normal life again.
Yes,
right? Exactly. Like dancing with each other, like nothing happened, just for one night. Like a night that you can forget and like be happy. And I think it was good it was in Petach Tikva, because it's just like a place that has, you know, it's not Shar HaNegev, it's not Shfaim, it's just a sterile environment.
Nothing yes. against Petach Tikva, right?
No, of course not. It's a lovely city.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was asking you about your group and like how October 7 affected you as a group and how do you go through that together? Did you use your like power and strength as a group to face this reality, or was it like an individual?
So my group, since we were very little, we were always very together. We were all good friends. We are one of the bigger groups, but we are also very close, which is something you don't see a lot. I think during this time, it was very important for us to stay together. We had one of our one of the friends from our groups, Agam Golchen, who was kidnapped by Gaza and returned. During the time she was not there, we were all very trying to stay positive. That was, I think, the time we had the hardest time as a group, because we were not all there and we were trying to be like, we're good, we're fine, we're trying to forget everything that happened. Since then, we had the teen walk, which was a walk from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, where more than 10,000 teens joined us.
Amazing.
It was for the return of the hostages. We obviously had the show, which is the end of Yud Bet show, which we returned. I think the last time they did it was about, I think, more than 10 years ago.
Yeah, many years
more,
ago.
More?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't remember the last time.
Same.
And we brought it back, which is very special, especially at this time. It's like the theme of it is basically you kind of laugh about the kibbutz.
And the people of the kibbutz.
And the people of the kibbutz, yes.
Kind
so
of?
So we basically tried to base it off the good things that happened during this time. So we joked about the laundry machines, and we joked about the dining hall, and we joked about everything that we can joke about, obviously.
The civilian guard.
Yes. we joked about them too.
Gan Betzer.
The head of the squad. Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of inside jokes here, friends.
Yes.
But it's actually a good sign to see that there are opportunities to schedule a time to smile and a time to laugh, and that people are creating that. I think it's part of dealing with, you know, the challenges that we have. So this is a, I'm reflecting on something good that is happening here. We're going to move into the last part of our discussion today and talk a bit about the future. So I mentioned before that Kfar Aza will be moving to a temporary living location in Ruhama. And a few weeks ago, almost months ago, every family had to decide if they're going to go for this move or not. If they're going to be joining the vast majority of the community and live in a caravan slash caravilla for the next 2 years or so in a temporary living location, or if they're going to take up the government on its offer for a stipend, an accommodation stipend, and do their own thing until Kfar Aza reopens. So if you don't mind sharing with us, what was the Shabbat dinner discourse, the Shabbat dinner talk like before you had to make the decision? Were there people in your family who didn't want to move, who wanted to move? What did that discussion look like?
It was actually a Shabbat dinner where we talked about this. It was me, my mother, my stepfather, and my two brothers. We sat around the dinner table in a caravilla in Shfaim, and we talked about this. We are very unanimous about it because the five of us really want to come back to Kfar Aza. I was not born there. We moved there right after Tzuk Eitan, like a month after.
The 2014 war.
Yeah. And we are there for 10 years. After 2 years in the kibbutz, where we became members. And I have a really strong connection to Kfar Aza, to my group in Kfar Aza. And we all really want to go back. So we didn't have like a discussion and more like a unanimous agreement that we want to go to Ruhama because that's the move, I guess, to for the community. Not everybody agrees, and that's obvious because everybody has their different inner discussions and things that he needs to consider. And we want to go to Ruhama. We are going to Ruhama to live back together in a bigger car villa. And then go back to the kibbutz. That's the plan. Again, there is 2 years before we can come back to Kfar Aza, but I'm pretty set on it. So,
thank you. Gome?
We actually didn't really have a big talk about it because obviously everyone is separated, so gathering everyone together is a very difficult task for us. My mom was very set on moving there. So was I, obviously. I really want to go to Kfar Aza.
You had no doubts?
No, I had no doubts that I want to be in Kfar Aza in the end. And if that's where my kibbutz is moving, that's where I will move.
Is your group also moving?
Most of them, I think. We have some that don't, that aren't, but most of them
are moving.
That's
actually very special to hear because you were talking about young adults who are going to be soldiers soon. Mm-hmm. 18-year-olds as of now, and for the next 2 years are going to be living in Ruhama with the community. So that's very special, and I think a wonderful thing to share with our listeners today.
Mm-hmm. So the decision was whether it's only me and my mom, or we're all moving together. My dad has to stay in Tel Aviv because of the treatments. He's still in physiotherapy, I think it's called. So he has to stay in Tel Aviv to be close to the hospital. My sister is in the army. She's
an officer.
She's an officer.
Yeah.
Okay. She's an officer. So she also has to stay around the center, which is where her base is. So she also decided to stay in Tel Aviv. And my brother just kind of decided to go with the flow and come with us. So that's how we did it. We split our family. And
Sunny the dog.
And Sunny the dog, of course.
She's the most important member of the family.
I guess.
Sunny's moving, so we're all moving.
Yes, exactly.
She leads the way.
How about you?
My sister and her kids and her husband, I don't really know what they're going to do. They're really conflict about it. But I know that my parents are going to Ruhama. And about the time that everybody's going to Ruhama, I'm going to the big trip after the army.
Where are you going?
South America.
All right. South America, yes. Look out.
Finally. And, so I didn't take any something to Ruhama, but maybe when I come back, I will be there with my parents. Of course, the goal is to go back to Kfar Aza. It doesn't matter if I'm going to Ruhama or maybe I will be in the center of Israel for that time, but in the end, I will be back in Kfar Aza and live there.
Well, I want to thank all of you on behalf of Noam and myself for joining us today. This has been a very special episode of Kfar Aza Talk, and we look forward to additional conversations that we're going to have with more young adults from the different peer groups that we've learned about today. It's also a good opportunity to tell our listeners that if they want to support Kfar Aza and the community as it continues this journey that is filled with obstacles that everyone is going to overcome successfully as possible, then look out for our JGive campaign, which is called Kfar Aza Is Not Alone. Anyone from any place in the world can donate there. We have a nonprofit that is basically creating and helping to fund educational projects, welfare projects, mental health projects. So please, if you find it right for you and your family and aligns with your values, help this community as it goes through everything it's going through to stay as strong as possible. This is a strong community, and we need to keep it a strong community because there's still a bit of a journey to go through. We want to say thank you to our supporters. Thank you to our listeners. And we continue to pray for the safe return of all of the hostages and our soldiers. Toda rabba.